right now, there is no industry standards, such as like a HACCP plan, like a sanitation standard operation procedures to see how we going to control the foodborne pathogen in the feed milling processing, and what is the temperature the conditioner should be reached will be enough, or we say perfectly, to control the foodborne pathogens.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast, coming to you from North Carolina State University's Animal Food Manufacturing Program. I'm Professor Adam Fahrenholz, and on behalf of Wisenetics, I'm excited to introduce our guest today. Our guest is professor and extension specialist in the School of Agricultural and Food Systems at West Virginia University. This is Professor Dr. Kanglang Shen. Thanks a lot for joining us today. We're really excited to have you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So I know that your background and some of what we're going to talk about today has to do with microbial safety. If you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself to the audience and give us a bit of your background on how you came to be doing what you're doing there at West Virginia and kind of what your program encompasses.
So I came to United States in 2006 to study a PhD of food science and meat safety. So I did this almost like 19 years of microbial safety of food products, including like fresh produce and also poultry meat. And I also teach general microbiology with lab food chemistry, an introductory course like Living a Microbiology World, including food microbiology labs, those advanced graduate courses. And my research basically is for developing post-harvest sanitizing procedures to control foodborne pathogens in poultry meats and using antimicrobials and also using thermal inactivation. Now, we are at WVU in a collaborated program. We worked with food scientists, agri-economists, and also working with a poultry scientist at WVU Farm. For example, Dr. Joe Motz at WVU Farm has established a feeds meal facility contributed by the industry. So his students and my students started to do some of the microbial safety research on the feeds. Then we started the lab work, and then one of his graduate students, Dr. Tim Bodes, I was served of his PhD committee, and we worked together for some preliminary data in the lab, and then we published two papers at Poultry Science and the Journal of Applied and Poultry Research, and then he got a faculty position at Mississippi State University at Poultry Science Department, and his specialist is for feeds. Then we are trying to help our young faculty, our alumni to be successful. So we continued his research at WVU, and we submitted to USDA NIFA Critical and Agriculture Extension Program, which is under the AFRI catalog. And then we very lucky to got funded. And that his first proposal. And then we start to do the work, and the work will be expand the lab work, including including the thermal inactivation. Then not only stay in the lab, we will to do the pilot plant mirroring processing to see the thermal inactivation activity to control the pathogens. So that's how we started to do the feeds project. Now, be very honestly to say, my background basically is microbiology in the food products. And for me, at the feeds area is just recently like 2 to 3 years. have been done by the meat processing and also poultry meat, fresh produce, and with integrated research and research extension activities, also some teaching activities in recent like 10, 15 years. But just to be entry level to the feeds area in recent 1 to 3 years.
Very good. All right. Well, welcome to the feed area. We're always glad to add. There's not a lot of us working in the space, so we're always glad to add more. So jumping into that, when we talk about microbial feed safety, what are the more common types of things that we would look at in animal feed? You know, what are going to be some of those potential microbial contaminants? And do we have, you know, evidence that suggests that they are, you know, being negatively impacted? Are we seeing the serotypes that we would know would be negative to animal health in feed of those microbials? So I guess my question is, which do we expect to actually see? And do we have evidence to suggest that there is an actual contamination and animal health pathway that is occurring through animal feed?
Now, so let's start from saying this. So feeds is, we say it's a low moisture content and water activity products. So theoretically, compared to fresh meat, their moisture content is somehow like 15% or 20%, sometimes only like 10%. So, and with water activity like 0.25, 0.3, the level. So it's a low water activity products. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, should not be a good reservoir for the bacteria to survive because it's very dry.
Sure.
But recently, if we read the research manuscripts, published manuscripts, more and more research showing the bacteria start to survive during the feeds processing. And the percentage of sampling could be like 5%, 10%, 20% of the feeds are tested positive for the common foodborne pathogen from the poultry, such as Salmonella, E. coli, sometimes Campylobacter, although there is only one or two papers show the Campylobacter jejuni is present, mm-hmm. and also the endospore-forming bacteria like Clostridium species. Mm-hmm. So we can say those pathogen, it is, I would say, emerging but under-researched scenario. For example, Salmonella and the Campylobacter in the poultry meats, that's a common pathogen, has more than maybe 1,000 papers there talk about the control strategies. But for those pathogens on the feeds is emerging, and the recently emerging is under-researched. Mm-hmm. And what is interesting is that, so for example, when we do the thermal inactivation, we find that through the conditioning and the process called hygienizing, and then the milling, and then the curing, we find the moisture content is even low. It's decreased from like 15% to only like 10, even 9.5%. Then we find that the bacteria, we talk about the B value of the bacteria is increased, mm-hmm. which means those bacteria could become resistant in those dry, or we say desiccation environments. So that's become some challenge, because those dry and the desiccation stress adapted cells could cause cross protection if you're going through the further, any of those further treatments. Mm-hmm. So if they are contaminated with the pathogen, then they go to the animal's body, they could be more resistant to all those protection in the body for themselves, and then cause the disease. So that's what we find all the time if we do the literature review. So that's one of the things interesting. Another thing is that right now, there is no industry standards such as like a HACCP plan, like sanitation standard operation procedures to see how we're going to control the foodborne pathogen in the feed's milling processing, and what is the temperature the conditioner should be reached will be enough, or we say perfectly, to control the foodborne pathogens. So these are some of the information is interested, so we try to solve the problem. So in the lab, we are using Salmonella to do the thermal inactivation in a circulated water bus. And we set a temperature like 65, 70, 75, 80, 85. And we do the normal death curve, testing D value, Z value of those pathogens with different temperature. And it's very important we have those tools, which is a predictive modeling tools, like GenaFit, like USDA, IPMP software, which is encoding 4 to 7 multiple mass equations. So we can testing those in a thermal inactivation index. Then we think about, we can test in some of the surrogate. Because if we do the application for the pathogen in the milling process, it's impossible. Those are biosafety level 2 pathogen. And, but we have to evaluate the milling and the thermal inactivation process. So we do a side-by-side comparison between Salmonella and a very well-recognized surrogate is Enterococcus faecalis. Mm-hmm. And then we find that the Enterococcus faecalis is an ideal and a very good surrogate during the thermal processing. So we, just the last summer, we using Enterococcus faecalis in our milling process to do the pilot plant, the thermal inactivation studies. So, and we also find it's very interesting, the temperature need to reach at least 80 to 85 degrees Celsius can kill the surrogate one log, which means 90% reduction, at least 51 seconds, the conditioning processing. So, so somehow I would say there is a no really have outbreaks reported by the feeds. There is a no major recourse, but more and more research paper or review paper has shown the pathogen could be happen from a preventive control processing ideas. We started to looking for the research on the thermal inactivation of the feeds. Especially we recently, in the 5-10 years, we applied the FSMA, Food Safety Modernization Act, during the food processing. And they are talking about the idea is preventive control. And it's only on the food products right now, but I think for the feeds, for the animal feeds, if we do some of the research in a little bit in advance, which could certainly prevent a possible outbreaks or major recalls will be happen. So that's what the idea.
Okay, very, very good. Again, my guest today is Dr. Kelling-Ling Shen from the West Virginia University School of Agricultural and Food Sciences. I wanted to, one of the things that we get concerned about, and it's become even more of something that we think about as we develop new ingredients that I think goes along with this is the things that we generally expect that we would have to do from a thermal processing standpoint to inactivate or to kill these different pathogenic microorganisms are also things that aren't necessarily the greatest conditions for maybe some of the other organism-based types of additives we're seeing today, probiotics, prebiotics, yeasts, things like that. Is that a part of your of the work you guys are looking at as well as to what happens if we are attaining the conditions to potentially control a pathogen of concern? Do we have any nutritional concerns as well?
We have not looked for like probiotics, prebiotics, or those, or yeast, or the other things during the feeds, like manufacturing process, to see how that improved the growth of the animals, of the chicken. Because that's outside of my area, and that's for the nutrition scientist's job to do. Now, regarding the ingredients in the feeds, they may affect the thermal inactivation. That could be the lipids concentration. Because more and more research has been showing if you are increasing the lipids concentration, they will have a protection impact for the bacteria. So you may, so let's say you have like a 5% fatty acids, and you may need 75 degrees Celsius for 60 seconds to killing one log of bacteria. If you are increasing the lipids concentration to 10%, from the nutrition perspective, but you may need a higher temperature to kill because those, to kill the pathogen, because those lipids become a fatty acids, has been a protection layer for the pathogens. So that's something we are interested to look for in our future studies, especially like a different formula. We will see the components, different components of the fatty acids. There has not been reported to see other nutrition ingredients will impact the safety, the microbial safety yet.
Okay, so that's potential kind of as we look forward and see, depending on what your research shows and what kind of times and temperatures that we will need to attain in order to control some of these. Okay, at those times and temperatures, what are we seeing with potentially other nutritional factors and things like that? Another question that I had that always comes up when we talk about the potential of using something like pelleting and conditioning and pelleting as pathogen control. And we know that this is something that whether the data exists or not, we know that in other parts of the world, they absolutely use this process as part of pathogen control, even if it is just preventive without necessarily having the data to know for sure that it's necessary or to what extent we're doing it. One of the things we also talk about a lot in the feed industry is while the conditioning and pelleting very well may be able to be used as a thermal control, as a kill step, we have the issue of we are then going into a cooler that is pulling ambient air from the environment, that we are going into bins and conveyors and further processing equipment and onto trucks and things like that, that are not going to necessarily be either fully sanitized or closed from the environment or things like that, that we might see in, let's say, more of like a human food processing facility. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that, about how do we reconcile a process in kind of the middle that could be, in fact, a kill step, a pathogen control step, and then what happens after that, if there's any, you know, what we deal with any residual effects after that process has occurred.
This is, I think, related to the packaging, pretty much the packaging process. I mean, in the food products, we can do a vacuum package. Certainly, we can likely say destroy all the oxygen. So the oxygen is a major resource for the aerobic bacteria to grow and the facultative bacteria to grow too. We can destroy all the oxygen. Vacuum package for the feeds, I don't think it's been using right now very widely. No. And nobody used that one. So we have to do the aerobic storage. Then the aerobic storage, you more or less will have the oxygen there. And also we may need to look for the modified packaging, looks like the different combination with nitrogen, carbon dioxide, and the oxygen. But after that is storage, the shelf life, the places to store. Well, you cannot put it in the refrigerator temperature. That will be generate moisture. You cannot put in a very hot places. I would say that like the room temperature, the storage room is very ideal. But the concern what I have is those type of feeds, whether we can treat them as a hygroscopic products, like our coffee bean, mm-hmm. like a coffee powder, which means if we draw a curve, the y-axis, let's say the what activity, okay, x-axis what activity, y-axis is moisture. So slightly change of the environmental moisture, their water activity is going to be significantly increased. And so I think maybe some of the containers similar to the coffee beans, those material maybe should be applied in the feeds packaging processing instead of like right now we just put in the mesh bags. And that pretty much they can look for. Other than that, I think the mixture feeding with different ingredients, we need to make sure the other ingredients is not contaminated or the presence of the foodborne pathogens. Now, that is relatively tough because we can rely on microbial sampling or testing, but we know that sampling and testing might not be successfully, we can say, guarantee the zero tolerance, zero percent of the pathogens. Sometimes we can rely on the supplier's documents saying all these ingredients has been tested or they have been passing through the last process of like a radiation. So I don't know that in the processing, maybe they apply another intervention strategies like radiation before they do the packaging could be thermal. Could be plus the thermal inactivation to make sure the zero tolerance of the foodborne pathogens. This is like we do the ground beef before we go to the market. We always have another final step of the radiation to do that. So, yeah. But it's really tough because those are the particles that are very small and spread it everywhere. So I do think as an extension specialist, those training programs, we can develop those training programs to let the producers or the processors know the potential risk of the microbial safety.
No, I think those are some really good points. And I think one of the things that it goes to with the work that you guys are looking at there at West Virginia is this is, you know, we need to know in the pellet mill and in the conditioning and through that process, we need to know, you know, depending on the potential contaminant coming in this case, a microbial contaminant, and like you said, Salmonella, E. coli, Campi, whatever it is, based on what's coming in, its particular amount of dosage or the strains or whatever it is that's coming through, what kind of conditions we need to do in order to control that. That's data that we need so that we know the answer. And then we can make some decisions moving forward from that about, okay, are we capable of doing that? And if we are, then that's a good step. It's a good process. If I'm a facility and I'm not capable of doing that, then I know I have other controls in place. And then I also have to consider that this process, you know, once it's complete, I've done what I can, but I've got to look at what's going to happen downstream too, and try to do that control as best as possible because, you know, there's not a residual there that will keep it down. So if whatever I've gotten rid of, now I have to try to do a good job with sanitation and everything else to maybe keep it from coming back.
It's time for our famous three.
Deep in the jungle, nature holds the secrets to healthier, happier chickens. Science is unlocking those secrets with Optient, the revolutionary lighting innovation for poultry farming. By mimicking nature, Optient Gradient Lighting creates a unique floor-level lighting gradient that improves feed conversion by up to 4 points, slashes energy use by 70%, and keeps flocks calm and stress-free. That means better animal welfare and a more efficient farm. Want to learn more? Optient Gradient Lighting is now available exclusively through your local Valco dealership or email optient@val-co.com today.
You mentioned irradiation. I'm curious in our last couple minutes here too. since we're talking about feed science, and I know the work you guys are doing is on thermal processing, but we also have other types of feed that will not go through thermal processing because of the cost or because of the type of feed that maybe the consumer wants to get. Maybe they're feeding something to a backyard chicken and they don't want something that's processed. They like the idea of something more, quote, natural, for whatever that term means. You mentioned irradiation. I'm curious, is there anything else out there? We know that irradiation is expensive and it's unlikely in large scale feed processing, but maybe on more of the pet side, that could be a thing. Anything else that is a possibility for controlling microbial contamination that's not on the thermal side that you could see someday maybe being a part of a process if need be?
Well, jumping my mind, it's difficult to have something right now. Regarding the radiation, so we have a large facility right now only. Mm-hmm. This reminded me of another thing we did in the poultry processing all the time is electronic static sprayer. Hmm. So we have a large one, industry using a large one down to Georgia. But then 5 to 10 years later, they developed a portable one. So I don't know the radiation, they could develop those portable one, but the challenge will be the chemical safety and the radiation mm-hmm. safety. Mm-hmm. So, but if you can find the appropriate dose, which is allowable to be used, not causing the damage of the human being who are using it, then the portable one should be a choice.
Yep.
Now we also, with those developing right now, the technology like AI technology, now those things you may not be handled by the human being. You can be using a robots type of thing, could be that's more advanced in the future. They can be handling those processing, you know. Because for the feeds, they are really tiny and really spread everywhere. So
yeah,
you cannot add in antimicrobials. You cannot add in other ingredients there. So that becomes very tough. And some non-thermal technology like cold plasma, I'm not sure about those things we can do. But since it's more, looks like it's going to make the processing more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And most of these things do, right? Most of them make it more expensive. But what I'm excited about, as you describe the work that you guys are doing, is answering a question that needs to be answered to provide the data. And maybe this is something that producers should be doing right away, or maybe it's not something that they need to do yet. But we want to have the information. We want to have the tools if it becomes necessary, or if it already is. And I think the same thing's true for those other things. That's why I was asking about things like, for example, irradiation. We know that there's maybe some, you know, chemical additives that can be used, acids and things like that. And I think whether or not people know that they feel they need to use them now, whether or not they feel like there has been a microbial challenge now, understanding what the options would be in the event that it becomes necessary, better to know ahead of time and then be able to use it right away than to have to go do the research then. And I think that's what's exciting. It's kind of it's forward thinking in many ways to make sure we have that information.
Yes, I agree with that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I really enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate all the insight. I think you guys will find quite a bit of interest in that information as folks come out. And, you know, even if it's not something that is a permanent kill step, still knowing that if I reach these values, I know at least what was coming in has been taken care of is something that's, you know, always good for the feed industry to know. So I thank you for the information. It was a good conversation.
Thank you for the opportunity. This is the first time I'm in the poultry science in the feeds area to have a discussion about these topics.
Yeah, very good. Well, we're glad to have you, and we'll be interested to maybe come back and talk with you again in the future to hear what you guys are finding out.
Thank you.
Again, my guest today has been Canling Shin. He is a professor and extension specialist in the School of Agriculture and Food Systems at West Virginia University in Morgantown. Thanks a lot. On behalf of Wisenetics, I'm Adam Fahrenholz. This has been the Feed Science Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, watching, and we will talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.